I would sometimes, well, I felt it was important as a disciple of Jesus to be spreading the gospel. But I have to admit, I had like absolutely no idea how to do that. And so there were two kind of positions that I would kind of flop between. The first is being totally overwhelmed and be like, I don't know how to do this. I'm just going to not do anything. Obviously, not a great way to save people if you're just not doing anything. The other side, equally ineffective, however. And that was that I just thought that maybe, because I was in the Church of Christ and I was like better than everybody else, that I would know more than everybody else. And I could just impress them with my Bible knowledge. So anytime there was like a Bible-based thing going on at school, I was there trying to impress other people so they just knew how much knowledge I had, and so they would like come to my church. And as you can imagine, this was not effective at all for many reasons. One, because people don't like being thought of as foolish. Two, because it was about me. I mean, we'll be honest here. I was spreading the gospel of Brent Dyer and how much he knew, and I wasn't pointing to people to Jesus. I was pointing people to me. And I think this is a temptation that is easy to fall into. I think I fall into it even sometimes as a preacher, that I pick topics or avenues to go through so that, you know, I can build up my ethos that, oh man, this guy, he knows so much, and I can like show off all my Bible knowledge, when really I'm a 24-year-old kid. There's a lot that I don't know. And that's not the point of preaching. That's not the point of the gospel at all. And yet both of these things, both of these modes of I'm totally overwhelmed, I have no idea what I'm doing, and everybody look how much I know, ultimately come from the same root cause, which is looking at my own power, at my own strength, as being the driving force behind the success of spreading the gospel and making the church grow, instead of looking to God. And so it is with that in mind, I want to turn to the book of Exodus, to Exodus chapter 3, which Bill read for us this morning. And we're going to get a couple pointers in evangelism from Moses. Because not just me as a preacher, but all of us are tasked with carrying the gospel out in the world. And I think that can be a really overwhelming and scary thing. And I think that part of the reason for that is that we are looking at ourselves and not at God. And that is really going to be the determining factor in the success is God's message the message we're sharing? Is God the focus point of what we're sharing? And that's why I love the song that Eric just led us in. He was like, hey, are there any songs that would lend well to the lesson? I said, yes, do you know May the Mind of Christ My Savior? He's like, no, I don't know that one. I was like, okay, well. And then he learned it, which was fantastic. But the last verse is phenomenal. Verse 5, may his beauty rest upon me as I seek the lost to win. And may they forget the channel, seeing only him. What made Moses successful in his ministry, I'll just tell you right up front, is that he was a mouthpiece for the great I Am. And that his power was God's power working through Moses. And as we seek to save the lost, the more we can point them away from us, and the less we can focus on our own strength and look at God's strength, the more success we're going to have in our mission. Because God's power is really the driving force behind the message of the gospel. It always has been. So, Exodus evangelism. The Exodus is perhaps one of the most significant events in the Bible. I mean, like, I would argue maybe like third place behind, you know, death, burial, resurrection of Jesus and like start of the church, Exodus. It's debatable, but still significant. In Deuteronomy, he says, ask now of the days that are past, which were before you, since the day that God created man on the earth, and ask from one end of heaven to the other whether such a great thing as this has ever happened or was ever heard of. Did any people ever hear the voice of God speak out of the midst of the fire as you have heard and still live? Or has any God ever attempted to go and take a nation for himself from the midst of another nation by trials, by signs, by wonders, and by war, by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and by great deeds of terror, all of which the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? To you it was shown that you might know that the Lord is God, there is no other beside him. That God looked down on his people in Egypt, and he delivered them by his own power so that they might know that he alone is God. This is the Exodus. No other God could do what God did. And this message that Moses is given, the message of the Exodus, is significant, has lots of parallels to us. And so, as I said, we're in Exodus chapter 3. I want to read verses 7 and 8, because this is what God sees. This is what God is going to do. God appears to Moses. It says in verse 7 of Exodus 3, "The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I've come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites." So, two big things that come from this. One, God says, I know what's going on. Two, I'm going to solve it. God is the power behind the Exodus. Period. God knew the problem, and God was going to fix it. And he says, Moses, here's what I want you to do. Flip down to verses 16 through 18. It says, "Go and gather the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, has appeared to me saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us, and now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God." So, what's God doing in this? God is going to deliver his people. He sees the problem. He is going to solve it. What is Moses' role? Go tell the people, I'm going to save them. Go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And I think a lot of times when we think about evangelism, it's incredibly overwhelming because we're trying to take on God's role. But God is the one that did the Exodus. God is the one that's going to do the saving. God is going to do all the rescuing and the transforming. He's the one that's going to open hearts and close hearts and make his glory be shown. Our role is like Moses. Speak to God's people and tell them salvation is coming. Speak to those who are opposed to God and tell them judgment is coming. And that's what we're going to see Moses doing. That Moses, he doesn't worry about his own strength. I mean, he does a little bit, but God addresses it. And that what makes Moses successful is that he doesn't try and do what's beyond his power. He's not concerned with the things that he can do or the things, but he's focused on God. As we get to Moses' message, we see him speaking to all of these kinds of people. Moses speaks to the people here in chapter 4, verses 29 through 31. It says, "Then Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the people of Israel. Aaron spoke all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel and that he had seen their afflictions, they bowed their heads and worshipped." Just like Moses, we have been given a message of great hope, a message that God saves us from our slavery. Constantly, message of Jesus' ministry, especially in the Old Testament, but even sometimes in Matthew 2:15, "Out of Egypt I've called my son." There's this idea of Jesus bringing about a new Exodus. And we, like Moses, are here to tell people about the power of God and the things that God is doing. The liberation that Jesus brings and brought and will bring from sin and slavery to sin. We've got good news for the world. But Moses did not rescue the people. Moses did not save their souls. All of that was God. Moses and Aaron just told the people the message. Because the power is God's power. It's not our own power. Moses preached the message. He spoke it. He told them salvation is coming. That was Moses' job. But then Moses preaches to Pharaoh. He does this a lot, but we'll look at chapter 8. Verses 1 through 4, this is the second plague, the plague of the frogs. "The Lord said to Moses, go in to Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs. They will come up into the house and into your bedroom and on your bed, into the house of your servants and your people and in your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come up on you and on your people and all your servants. God says, listen, Pharaoh, if you do not let my people go, I'm going to send frogs on you. And then as we continue through the plagues, this same sort of pattern appears many times. If you do not let my people go, this is what's going to happen. And just as Moses was tasked with this kind of message, we also have a similar message, that we have been told that God brings salvation, but he also brings judgment. And we are told the kinds of things that God will judge. And so we see that there are people in our lives, in our workplaces, in our communities, that need this message because judgment is coming. And those who are rebellious against God need to be given the message that God is going to bring judgment. Now, like Pharaoh, they might not listen to us. But that's not Moses' fault. That's not your fault. It's kind of their own fault that they have hardened their hearts. But our task is not to be the most convincing, most compelling person. It's not to be the most impressive or the most powerful. It's to tell people the message. In this case, judgment is coming. Either obey God or receive his wrath. But then Moses preaches even more things. We see in chapter 12, he preaches to the people about the Passover. And this is like the whole chapter of chapter 12. But we'll just look at verses 13 and 14. Moses says, the blood shall be a sign for you on your houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike Israel. This day will be a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast of the Lord throughout your generations, as a statute forever. You shall keep it as a feast. So what we see happening here is God tells Moses, and Moses tells the people, the Passover is coming. There's going to be destruction, and you need to prepare. And the same is true for us. We have a preparation message as well, that God brings salvation, but there are certain things that we have to do to respond to the gospel in faith. We talked about that last week. And we have a preparation message to say, hey, you gotta get ready. Be watchful. Prepare yourself. Make your house ready. Because God is coming, and there are some things that you need to do first. And again, Moses didn't bring the Passover. Moses didn't do anything. He just told the people what God was doing. And that was Moses' job, and that's what Moses did. Finally, we see in chapter 14, they're crossing the Red Sea. The people are terrified. The Israelites are afraid because the Pharaoh has changed his mind about letting the people go. And they cry out to Moses, and this is what Moses says in chapter 14, verses 13 and 14. Moses said to the people, fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent. Moses doesn't rescue the people out of Egypt. God does. Moses doesn't bring about the salvation. This is the salvation of the Lord. And yet Moses points to God and says, look at him. He is your source of salvation. And so we also have a message in like manner to people out in the world that sometimes things are going to get tough. Sometimes things are going to be scary. But that God is a source of salvation. God is a source of assurance. And that if we trust in him, we will receive deliverance. And that is, of course, what happens. Moses is called, Moses preaches, but ultimately we see God doing everything. That from the plagues, which we saw all throughout, that caused Pharaoh's heart to be hardened and then his heart to be softened and changed, and God works this to bring glory to him. God says some plagues that fall on the Israelites and some plagues that fall only on the Egyptians, but God is in control the whole time. God tells the people, listen, when you leave, you're going to plunder the Egyptians. They're going to say, get out of here and take all of our gold. And who brings that about? It wasn't Moses. It wasn't the power of the people. It was God. And here again, standing at the edge of the Red Sea, it is God that rescues his people. Let's read verses 19 through 31. Verses 19 through 31 of Exodus 14. Then the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. There was a cloud and the darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord in the pillar of fire and of cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into panic, clogging their chariot wheels so they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen." So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea turned to its normal course. When the morning appeared, and as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the hosts of Pharaoh that had fallen into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. God has called us to carry his message of deliverance to people. But we are not the cause of deliverance. And when we look to ourselves or our own power, either on one hand to become despaired by our weakness, or on the other hand to exalt our own power, both of those are silly, because the power is God's power. He delivers the Israelites. He fights for them. He opens the waters and closes the waters. All Moses does is tell the people what to do, and he stretches out his hand a couple times. God is the source of this deliverance. And that is the power of our message as well. That we can look out at the world, and we can say, "Listen, I don't know how to do this. I'm too old. I'm too young. I don't know enough. I'm not relatable. People don't like me." We can make lots and lots of excuses. We can look at our church sometimes where we say, "You know what, there's not enough of us to really affect the change that we're trying to make." And all of those things are looking at us and not at God. But I want you to look here in verse 31. What is it that makes the people believe God, or believe Moses? It is that Israel saw the power that the Lord used against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. When Moses spoke for God, and God acted, that's what instilled their trust in Moses. And again, we can be trying to spread the gospel, like I was in my youth and in my foolishness, and think, "You know what? I just got to get these people to trust me. How do I do that? Well, I guess I got to impress them." No. The power of the message comes when people see God at work in us. They hear his message coming from us. They forget the channel, seeing only him. That is the goal. That is where the power of the message comes. And so, it's a short but a simple message this morning to us, and that is that evangelism is often a source of fear. It is for me still. But that it is when we look to God, when we let his power be the driving force behind our message, then we stop looking at ourselves. We stop despairing about the simple things, and we stop pointing people toward us, and we point people to God. And that's when the message will be effective. And so the encouragement this morning is to point people to God. The encouragement this morning is to stop looking at your weaknesses and point them toward God. And that when you, like Moses, are speaking for the great I Am, people will believe you. And they will be saved because God is working in you. And so, this morning, if you have not been baptized, if you have not passed through the waters of salvation, becoming a part of the new nation of God, like we see here in Exodus, but also in baptism in the New Testament, we would love to tell you more about that. We would love to tell you about the great power of God to save you from your sins, to transform you, to make you a part of a nation who are dedicated to serving Him, a nation of people who are living out the purpose of humanity. But if that's not you, if you are already a part of God's kingdom, if you're a part of that nation, then I encourage you to take the message of God, just like Moses and Aaron did, and to not look to yourself, not to look at your own power, not to point people at you, but to point them to God, and from that to gain the boldness and the strength that you need, because God's power is amazing. We saw Him save His people in the Exodus. We saw Him fight for His people. We see the salvation of the Lord in the Exodus and in so many places, and God is that God still. And so I encourage you to take this message, to share it with others, to point people to God. If we can help you in any way this morning, we would ask that you would come as we stand and as we sing.